This week on RSPNB Update, has it actually happened? Have players actually been given a new roadmap or plan for RuneScape? We discuss upcoming content, including Requiem for a Dragon, a new Rex Matriarch, and Daemonheim Archaeology. Also, our theories on what exactly led us to this point. This is RSPNB Update, episode 982, recorded Thursday, April 18th, 2024. An actual plan. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of RSBNB Update this week. One of the most consequential weeks in RuneScape 3 this year. We got the announcement of a new quest. We got the announcement of some interesting rewards coming from that quest. We also got an announcement of what's coming in May and June, and the content strategy, amongst other things. And boy, we also got some spicy proteins as well later on in the show, don't we, Tanis?
I mean, if you think mayonnaise is spicy.
I do prefer jalapeno mayonnaise.
Okay.
But well, there you're go. Back. Welcome back.
Thank you, Shane. Sorry to be gone, but it is great to be back and a good week to be back. We got a lot to cover this week.
Indeed, and to help us do that, Pardassis is here because he's been on the last two times that we talked about 2024 content strategy, and we're going to pick up the ball where we left that. Welcome back, Bern.
Thank you. And yeah, we got a bit more to be sort of optimistic about this time rather than the last two, so looking forward to it.
Indeed. And of course, if you want to follow along, full show notes over at update.show. We have a friends chat, Bits Bytes, and the Discord is over at update.show/Discord. And I would be remiss if I didn't thank the experienced tier Patreon members who make RSBNB Update go. This week, that's Amos Reed, Andrew C., Drama Free, Jason S., Jesse W., Keski, Ricky A., Rippeth, Runestar, and the Naked Captain. Thank you so much, everybody, and you'll be hearing about our other Patreon offerings a little bit later in the podcast. In the meantime, I'm in game at Shane12088. Tanis can be found at Tanis79, and Pernasius is at Pernasius, unsurprisingly. So, I mentioned spicy this week, and you know, maybe we start with the quest, which is perhaps the least spicy thing as part of the entree this week. But coming next week, April 22nd, the next quest, what is being effectively billed as the finale of the Fort 4 and 3 storyline, is Requiem for a Dragon, which is being sold as Brave the Biting Frost of Ungale once more as you track down the recently escaped Vorkath, wrap up the Fort 4 and 3 storyline, and enter a new chapter in RuneScape lore. Dive deep into the stories of the Isle and the mystery surrounding Vorkath, and as well as unlocking a new ritual site to train your craft. And of course, this quest is being done by the wonderful Mod Shrike, Mod Stew, and Mod Zura. So, first thoughts on this quest? I know we haven't played it yet, but just where we're at right now, we'll save all the lore digging for next week. But first thoughts?
I wish it came out in a few weeks after something that we're going to be getting in May. Because when I hear Frozen Land, I think, uh-oh, hard
white
to
screen.
See.
Yeah.
Yep, white screen. That was my first reaction.
Yeah, fair enough on that with accessibility stuff.
I'm super excited. I mean, I love my quests, and I love the progression of a storyline where they, you know, sort of, it's a step up each time. So, you know, it's going to be good to wrap it up in sort of a reasonable amount of time. Yeah, just I'm looking forward to it. So
and the sense,
fingers crossed.
And the sense from this one is that it's bigger than any other Fort 4 and 3 ones that we've had.
Which is what you would, yeah.
Yeah. Mod Stew said in the live stream that he, you know, in one of his playtests, he spacebarred in and took him about 20 minutes. Whereas Mod Shrike, knowing, you know, what was to come in the quest, read everything and, you know, did what a usual quest player would do, and it took about an hour. So, you know, add a bit on to that for not knowing quest mechanics or where it's going to go. And that's the volume of quest we're looking at for this week. And I feel like that's what folks have been asking for since the end of the Twilight of the Gods and Elder God arc, because everything else that we've had since then has been very, very tiny. And it's left us questers kind of thinking, okay, what's next? Is this, you know, the new way of doing questing? Yada, yada, yada. So I am cautiously optimistic for this.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up about the recent quests where they're over in sort of 20, 30 minutes. And yeah, it's nice enough for a little bit of a story progression. But for people who do like the quests, I enjoy, okay, there's a big master quest coming out. It's going to take me 2 or 3 hours, you know, planning, setting up, getting done, and then just sinking into the game for that couple of hours and doing that. Yeah. And I've really missed that. And, you know,
And there's a question of if they're going to, you know, get back to that, and we'll come to that on the live stream, because that was actually something that was brought up by the community there, and rightly so. But requirements on this are actually steep. 86 archaeology. Yeah, 86 archaeology, 66 magic, 75 necromancy, 54 construction, which is building all the buildings at tier 1 of the fort, and level 10 slayer.
Which is fair enough. I mean, each quest should build on the last one. And obviously, we're going to get a new archaeology site, so thus 86 archaeology. 66 magic, which is obviously going to be for one of the spells that we're going to need to do. It's a reasonably tough boss fight, so we're going to need that necromancer. I mean, it's everything in there.
It makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I just want to say, a lot of what's going on with this quest, I feel like we're going to be talking about with the live stream as well, because like when we're talking the size of this quest what initials it may have had or what it may have been called in the past, really just I feel like our semantics in some ways, but in other ways, the requirements tell the whole story of what I think has been a major change in the way quests are done in RS in general.
Meaning
you can see these skill requirements, but there's a bigger funnel that's kind of starting you off. And if you're doing the quest, you're naturally getting to those requirements. Yeah. You don't have all these rinky-dink, unconnected, meaningless things that you have to do.
And hence why they mentioned Tomes of the Warlock needed for the archaeology, because that was the archaeology-based necromancy quest, and this is picking up off that, because you're going to be using archaeology to learn about Ungale and Vorkath.
Right. And whereas there was a time when you would have there just would have been a whole bunch of requirements because of the rank that they ranked the quest.
Yeah.
They just had to add a bunch of quest requirements.
Which is why they did that big cleanup a couple of months ago, or a month ago, actually.
Yeah. That was all Mod Stew, one of his Game Jam projects. Yep. Rewards are equally as big with this. In terms of, you know, they're not shy of giving out the XP out anymore. You get 100k necromancy XP, 100k archaeology XP, something called Zorgath's Ring, which gets upgraded, the Soulfarer title, access to the Ungale Necromancy Ritual Site, which is going to be a ritual site that's more leaned back in its training method, and except it doesn't give you soul progression. So for people who, you know, prefer that form of skilling, this is a different option for that, and this is really just continuing that bifurcation of necromancy being a combat skill, yet you train it with skill.
When you're at work, you just go here, and when you're at home to lean forward, you go to the proper site.
Yeah.
Or I'll actually get my rightful...
Right, because there's no ritual disturbances here.
Right. So this is cool.
Well, there are ritual disturbances, I thought it said, but they do last a bit longer, and it is less XP. I thought I read that somewhere.
Oh, yeah, right. Disturbances during these rituals will linger for longer times, and your components will last longer. So,
yeah.
That'll get balanced.
I never look at quest rewards normally, and I sort of I'm going, oh, I'm on the show this week, I have to read them. So
yeah,
but there was nothing. I mean, yeah, I mean,
the Zorgoth's ring is actually really interesting.
That's the one I like, and they'd already leaked that earlier anyway.
Because if you don't have the Reaver's Ring for the extra crit chance with Necromancy, this is your Necromancy Ring, because it gives you that Necromancy damage bonus. But after you upgrade it, every attack has a 5% chance to generate one additional residual soul. So it just makes building those souls that much faster when you're attacking, which allows you to, you know, either let them out one at a time or let them out in the big volley of souls. So I think that ring is really interesting, in that it's just like that Moonstone jewelry piece that came out not too long ago with the Owl Quest, in that it's not something that's going to be meta for, you know, the high-end PVMers who are going full Reavers and whatnot. But if you're going for a Slayer setup and you don't have the Reaver's ring, this is something you might want to look at after this quest. So I found that very interesting. But definitely looking forward to getting back to questing on this and seeing what it has the ability to offer for it. And, you know, just doing more archaeology, because, you know, we all said that Tomes of the Warlock, I think, was our favorite necromancy quest, given the archaeology bent that it had towards
it's
it.
It's funny. I mean,
sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I'm 200 mil. Basically almost 400 mil archaeology XP, but I'm actually, that's one of the things I'm most excited about getting back in, even though it's not really progressing me, just having another archaeology site to discover, and just because of the way they did it with little lore drops and everything in it,
yeah.
It's a fully rounded skill, so loving that we are getting the Demonheim archaeology site.
More
finally
on that after, but oh my god, perfect.
Yes.
Tanish, it sounded like you were going to say something there.
Oh, I was just going to say it's just kind of what in our appetite for the big entree.
Well, remember, let's just realize that Demonheim dig site is in the same realm as the Sintistan dig site, where it's not a full dig site.
Yeah.
It's going to be mini in air quotes. I want to temper expectations on that.
At this point, a mini Snickers after you ain't had a Snickers in a while.
Still good.
Still good. Yeah.
Alrighty then. Live stream, which, you know, I said this week, boy, it's been forever since I took notes for a live stream, but here we are. So they started dev work on this one at the end of January, which ModStu said was a bit compressed for quests in general. And he outlined that it was basically the process is that you start with pre-production, where they decide the story, including the endpoint and the setup of the next storyline, which this quest is going to do, by the way. It's going to set up the next storyline, choose the characters to focus on, and because of that, Ungil and Vorkath were the last hanging plot thread, so that's the direction they go. And the goal is to bring them to a close and set up the next thing. And the quest is best described as a narrative-led mystery adventure. Sounds perfect. It really does.
Mm-hmm.
3D cutscenes will be returning. They managed to co-op mod Raven from his other project inside Jagex to write a lore book for this quest. And this is, I think, where we're starting to see some of the player feedback taken on board for this, because also in the live stream, they mentioned that the bulk of the story here is focused on the player, which makes it much more player-led than what we had in the fourth storyline. And I think we heard that all the way through, is that we felt like we were just kind of witnessing things for most of the fourth stuff. So this is a change for that. Then I feel like we honed in on numerous fort quests. So that's good. But I think the biggest thing that everybody wants to talk about is the question of future Grandmaster quests, because what effectively came out from this is that they're unsure as to whether something of that scope will happen again in the future, like a big Extinction-level Grandmaster quest, like Wel'Gothic Sleeps, like Sliskay's Endgame. Those sorts of Grandmaster's quests seem to be having a few questions up in the air. around them, because they said it's a different time now with how Jagex operates in relation to quests compared to how it was in the past. And, you know, it becomes a question, well, do you release one big quest in a half year, or do you release three different quests in that same time? So they're very much in a never-say-never situation about that. So it's no for now, but never say never. They just want to strike the right kind of balance with that.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's sad for me, but I know I'm in the minority. I mean, those big 8-12 hour quests, I mean, I love those when I was doing them. They piss off, like, the Light Within pissed me off so much when I was doing it, just trying to get, because I didn't have the wiki or the guide, so I was running around doing all those mirrors and such myself. But they were brilliant. And, you know, the Sliske Zen game, finally getting through that first that first maze, only be faced with the same size one, the next one. You know, it was like, what? But again, I just loved it. And it took me, that one took me 10 hours. But, you know, I can sort of understand that there's not a lot of players that are going to have, you know, sort of 8, 10, 12 hours to set aside to get through a quest sort of in one or two sittings. So I can see where they're coming from. I do hope that sort of in the, you know, it is a never say never, and that, you know, we don't need them every year, but we do occasionally get something like that again in the future.
Yeah. And, you know, it's about as, for me, the way I see it, as the content creator in this and somebody who's been playing these quests for 20 years at this point, my goal with this, in addition to enjoying the quest and talking about it, because of course that's number one, but the next biggest thing I want to be able to do with what we do here on the show is get more people interested in questing. And that's specifically why the first thing this week on the agenda was the discussion of this quest and the rewards that it offered. Because, I mean, the questers and the lorehounds are always going to say that that's going to be number one, and rightly so. But there's lots of people out there who just, you know, don't want to do quests. And I feel like if you can get them hooked in with the seeing what the reward is, and then take them along for that adventure of how that quest is going to feel, then maybe they're going to go back and do some more quests, and eventually will convert somebody to being a quester. At the very least.
But I mean, I look at it, I mean, quests, I mean, yeah, I mean, a lot of the earlier quests are sort of,
you know, rough.
They're rough. Yeah, exactly. But still, and especially later quests, they're like stories. Like, you know, if you're watching a TV show, don't sit there. I mean, okay, it's going to take you double the time to do it, but read the text, read what's happening. And it sinks you into it. It's like reading a good book. I mean, you don't pick up a book, read the first page, skim through, and then read the ending. You know, you read each page. And, you know,
I read the last page of a book before I start reading the book.
Oh, my God. I would have chained you to the bloody radiator if I was in school with you. You'd be the guy I'd rip the book in half. Okay, read the first half, and then I'll give you the second half. But no, but I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, questing, and as I tell people, you know, when they ask why I love quests, I said, because it's a story. Don't spacebar, read what's happening, immerse yourself in it, and you actually understand some of the background behind characters and even little, you know, incidental characters. You can find out a little bit more about them and such. And it just makes it a fuller game for me. With that type of thing.
And I think the biggest thing, in addition to that side of it and bringing new people on, I think the thing that that I've heard as a concern from the questing type folks this week is that, in terms of level of escalation, what's the maximum level of escalation we're going to see right now, right? Is it going to be something that's like this, where it gets wrapped up, or is it going to go a little bit further to, like, while Gothic Sleeps or Ritual of the Majorat level? Personally, I think that's the sweet spot.
Yes. Well,
I feel like they've set up a real nice straw man here, and we're all having a debate about this when I feel like it's a false choice. You know, everyone says you can't do both. Okay, you can't do both at the same time, but you can do both. And there is a time and a place for each style of questing. Now, Grandmaster, that's almost kind of like the scapegoat in this.
Yeah, because it's a flashy word, to be honest.
It's a flashy word, and but to me, Grandmaster, that has a lot to do with those BS requirements I was talking about earlier.
Yes,
right. Some Grandmaster quests, yeah, they're longer, but
I mean, Alpha versus Omega was a Grandmaster quest,
right? The thing that makes to me Grandmaster is how pivotal it is to the lore of the story, you know, right? Mm. And so, so to me, let's say you're having a year and you're doing a storyline like 4 and 3, right? That's kind of getting people into it bit by bit. You're able to mix in other content, you know, throughout the year. But then the following year, you could have that big set piece quest. And I think you do those big set piece quests for finales of stories,
yeah,
like the gnomes and things like that.
Well, but let me just rattle off some.
You can only have it one or the other. And
let
I
me
don't
rattle
think
off some recent Grandmaster quests then. Alpha versus Omega, which was the culmination of the Razgul story. Extinction. Sins of the Father, which is a mini quest. I don't know why the wiki has that on there. Need to look into that. Pieces of Hate, Sliske's Endgame, Children of Ma, River of Blood, The Light Within, Plague's End, Fate of the Gods, One of a Kind, Birthright of the Dwarves, The World Wakes, The Brink of Extinction, Ritual of the Majra, The Void Stares Back, Nomad's Requiem, and Wel'Guthic Sleeps.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that you're seeing in that Grandmaster, you know, despite the length, and I point to Alpha versus Omega on this, is that it doesn't need to be, you know, long and laborious like Extinction was. It just needs to have that categorization where it sits in the story tree, you know? So
yeah, exactly. And as you said, like with this one here, the end of this is going to lead us into the next quest. You don't need to have a world-ending Grandmaster style quest at the end of every storyline. But if you've got a progression like for Inthry quest series leads into the next one, which perhaps leads into a third one, and then we get a Grandmaster at the end of it, because that is going to tie everything up. You know, maybe the reclaiming of the entire wilderness and it becomes a paradise again, you know. However they do it, but you know, it's they've got to look at, you can't say never do it, but I can understand we don't need a Grandmaster every year. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they go. But yeah, as long as quests, you know, we stick to. I mean, I don't mind having those little fun quests as you know, little sort of entry point quests to start off with. But you know, when they're a storyline quest, as long as it's progressing the story and taking us to the next point and sort of opening up more of the world, more characters, etc., you know, keep it going that way.
Yeah, and, you know, the interesting thing is that I feel like I've walked into this and it makes sense now. They mentioned that that's not how quests are. And, you know, if you follow the wiki and from that Grandmaster page that I was just reading, you get to the update that brought Succession in, where they actually removed difficulty from the quest overview screen and sorting section, so that now there's the timeline order on this one. And the initial definition of that Grandmaster is that it would have had 80-plus skill requirements on it, and the discussion around that, reading from the patch note here, is that difficulty is subjective, and each player has a unique definition of what makes a quest a Grandmaster, intermediate, so on and so forth. And because of this, they have just relied on other methods of sorting the quest list. So Grandmaster, in effect, was arbitrary back in the day on that. So it's just, at this point, it seems, it's just better to sort by, if you're looking at terms of, you know, difficulty, skill requirements involved, or if you're looking for something that's really long, go for length, because you can have a very long quest that falls into master or intermediate, as it used to be.
That's where I'm going.
So
that's great that that's actually where it started.
Right, right. And that's why and that's why we get this thing about how Jagex operates with Quest now is different than it's been in the past, because that goes back to Succession and that patch note I just read.
Okay.
So that you know, really explains everything, but I just think that there's a push by players to always have, you know, a big epic conclusion to that sort of thing, and I think that's incumbent on the storyline and knowing, you know, what's going to be involved in that to get that kind of grand conclusion behind it. And if you don't build up to that, well, then you're not going to get it. So I think that's the reasoning behind it.
Even then, though, what they're saying is they're not arbitrarily saying, well, this has to have 80 stats and this has to have this. And you can still have a conclusion. You can have an ending to a storyline that doesn't have to have those things.
Right, and because of that, based on how it used to be, that wouldn't be Grandmaster.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that kind of summarizes that, and that's why the wiki has then categorized, if you look at Grandmaster, that's why they have categorized Alpha versus Omega in Sins of the Father as Grandmaster, even though Alpha versus Omega was basically go just kill Raziel, and Sins of the Father was a mini quest that was, you know, short a deal with the effigy incubator, yet had requirements of 85 crafting, 85 rune crafting, 85 smithing, and 85 invention.
Yeah.
Whereas Alpha versus Omega had a requirement of 95 necromancy.
Mm. And again, I mean, that one I can sort of see being classed, but the Sins of the Father was just as you said, it was a mini quest. It's not really a grandmaster.
Yeah. So.
Or that one took longer, right? Because.
Yeah, but it took ages. I was going to say it was time gated.
Yeah, so, 6 months if you used your reset tokens.
Yes.
So
7 for me because I forgot one.
Yeah, which by the way, folks, remember every week to go check Thalman's shop and get the dialogue there.
Yay! Sorry, I'll bring that up. I'll bring that back. I'll bring that up when what we've been doing.
All right, fair enough. But you know, quest weeks are always wonderful here at Update, and I'm glad that we get to do this again next week. So do stay tuned for that next week.
And you know what's really good about that?
What's that?
Oh, now that my daughter's her and her boyfriend have bought a house together, but they don't move in until December, and her rent was up where she rented with her girlfriend a couple of weeks ago. So she's sort of moved back home between my place and her mum's place. But she's staying with me Wednesday, Thursday, and her mum Monday, Tuesday. So the quest being released on the Monday means I've got Tuesday to do it all without interruption.
Nice.
Oh, well, as they say, it's the little things in life, right?
That's it. Well, I mean, especially now, obviously, with everything. I plan everything around when my kids are visiting. So sometimes I don't get to do a quest for sort of 4 or 5 days because, my daughter's coming over this day, my son's coming over this day, I've got this on here. Now, when can I squeeze in the quest? But, yeah, next week's going to be a good one.
Rightio. Well, I'm going to thank some Patreon supporters, then we'll get into the into the semi-spicy news, I guess, this week. So this week I'd like to thank Alvaro L., Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvid Zell, Chubura, Daniel W., Dominic R., Drama Free, Duramax, Free Milk, Guy Lafleur, Jacob G., Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Keski, Lemon Lodge, Luminos, Nate the Great, Parnassius, Ren Hawk, Ricky A., Rippeth, Runestar, Samuel FL, Scott DS, Shirt Pants, Targayin, The Naked Captain, The Dabbing Goat, Tim, Tom V, Truth Ray, Ukulele Steve, Zant, and Zazicon. Big, huge thank you to everybody on this list and everybody in general supporting us on Patreon. You can learn more about those offerings over at patreon.com/rsbnb. And if you like what you see there, well, you can sign up for as little as $1 a month and you get access to an entire catalog of extra shows here from us. We discuss all sorts of things. Last month was the PVM episode in which we helped Pern get started on PVM. We'll get an update on how Zuck's going later. But this month, we also did the quest tier list, a much anticipated episode where we rated 27 quests over the span of about 90 minutes. So if you want to hear more quest tier lists, do let us know in the comments. We're always open to expanding out those tier lists because those are fun episodes to make. But we got tier list galore. We got the Dailyscape tier list, but it's not all tier list. I always mention the tier list because there's some of the content that people like the most, but there's other stuff too. There's stuff on EOC. That was our first installment. Legacy Combat, PMons going way back, all sorts of things. Anything you can really put your finger on that deserves about an hour discussion in RuneScape, we've done it. So patreon.com/rsbnb. We also have a VIP tier where for $3 a month, you'll get a VIP rank on Discord, which includes a special chat channel and a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, as well as high-quality stereo versions of the show. And if you give $5 a month, you'll get a shout-out on the podcast each and every week and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. And, of course, with that, we also send you the Patreon Christmas card in December, and of course the experienced here as well. Big huge thank you to all those people who we mentioned at the top of the show. But patreon.com/rsbnb, quest tier list is there, many other shows too. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thank you.
Okie dokie. New Rex Matriarch next month, the Necromancy Rex Matriarch Osius. This is being spearheaded by Mod Ramen. They've taken a couple of Game Jam updates that were popular and are moving them into production, this being one of them. I'm looking forward to this because I feel like the original Rex Matriarchs were fun and they were very interesting on the reward space. And, I mean, given the fact that there's an extra combat style in here, I feel like this is going to be something that's going to be appreciated, even if it's a beginner or introductory level boss.
A better ring than the Reaver's ring, perhaps. The Necromancy.
Probably the same.
Join it up with a new Horgoth, whatever his name, the Necromancy ring. Get that and get 10 drops off this one and hook them up together, and hey, you never know.
Yeah, and see, I wonder about this, because if you look at the way they did this and, you know, what they offer in terms of upgrading rings. What ring would you upgrade if you were keeping that same sort of idea behind it?
Well, that's the whole problem, isn't it?
Right. I mean, it's like there's no base for it, so you'd almost have to do something new entirely.
Exactly. Unless... Power creep. Exactly.
I said this on the old school show three times last week, and nobody has yelled at me for it, but I love Power Creep.
Thank you. Me too.
Yeah, I don't mind Power Creep. I mean, it just makes it for noobs like myself who can't fight. It just makes it easier for us to sort of get things done. But I mean, I still think we should have a passive offhand ring, and Luck of the Dwarves becomes like a passive, so you can wear that offhand and wear a combat ring on the main hand or something. But anyway, however they go. But I mean, doing something like, well, hey, you know, maybe if this drops something that combines the Reaver's ring with the that new ring that's coming from the quest, then, you know, you get, it just gives you that passive, so you've still got the same strength and everything that the Reaver's ring gives you, well, but it also gives you that passive thing or something, right, like that.
The thing is that the Reaver's ring wasn't necessarily intended to be the Necromancy ring. It just worked out so well because it gave that extra crit chance, and it has such a huge stat bonus on it that, given the fact that so many things, you know, PVM-wise, accuracy doesn't matter. It was just a, you know, free 5% crit chance on that. And, you know, you could use it for any of the other styles as well, but there's better offerings for each of them. So,
well, and see, and that's the thing. I mean, I would never have known the Reaver's ring. I was still using my the death ring of death until we did the show and it got explained to me. Oh, okay. So yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, it's really hard to know, but it's what I mean, I know the Quest Ring is going to be sort of a more of a mid-tier ring, but to release a mid-tier and this ring will have to be a higher tier for Necromancy. At the same time, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what they do. And, you know, I trust them. I mean, I know, you know, we are critical sometimes of them, and hopefully ours is constructive criticism when we give it to them. But, you know, I do trust them to do the right thing for the game, because, as we said, you know, we play the game, but this is their job. This is how they put food on the table and pay their mortgage and such. So they're not going to want to stuff it up. So when people say, oh, they're trying to ruin it, well, no, it's...
I don't know if it's been said anywhere, but do you think the fourth Conjure is too powerful a reward to come from a Necromancy Matriarch?
Which one?
The fourth Conjure.
No, because they're a tough enough... I mean, I can fight them, but I still die once or twice. They're for a mid-level PVMer like myself, they're still tough enough to chase, but... I mean, going by the way they've done them, I would have to assume it is going to be another an actual proper necromancy-based ring.
Okay, that's fair. I'd like to see the fourth Conjure eventually. I don't know if this is the spot.
But it wouldn't make sense to be here. I mean, and honestly, I don't think it makes sense to be a drop.
Conjure, yeah. It should be an unlock, yeah.
Yeah, that's where I'm at with that.
Okay. Well, I mean... It's close. May is only 3 weeks away at this point, so we'll probably hear something sooner rather than later.
Taking bets.
Yeah. I still think Conjure would be interesting, but that's just me.
Oh, that would be very interesting.
And, I mean, if they're staying on theme, then go, proper Necromancy Ring. But the question is then, what's the base item? So.
Yeah, that's it. Where are we going to get that base item from? Because what is it, 10 rings of all the other ones? So you'd have to get 10 or something.
Maybe you can make the base item with your soul. Maybe.
Maybe they come from moonstones. You have to make them and in do whatever you ensoul them and do all that. Yeah.
Oh, that'd be interesting to see. Maybe something moonstone related.
Yeah. We'll wait and see what they do.
Also in May.
Start saving those moonstone rings, people.
Also in May.
You heard it here first, and if you're making money, you got to give me 10%.
Ooh. Also in May, Relica graphical update, which we knew was on the way.
Yeah, but I'm excited about it. I spend a lot of time at Relica with...
doing what?
Clues. Clues. There's a lot of clue things out there. So it's a very old looking area. And I still run down there to get if I need my herbs, I run down to the Chaos Giants down there occasionally.
Okay. And also high contrast mode.
Yes.
Clap. Why explain to the folks why this is so important?
Well, this is great. I play with, I'm legally blind, so anything that can help me differentiate and see better is a great addition. And a lot of times that is something that can be very helpful just by making it darker or lighter. Right now, I get by doing doing some of this using the sky boxes and filters, but it will be nice to actually have something that's like dedicated to this. And this is what I was referring to when I was talking about the new quest. Obviously I'll be doing it next week when it comes out, but. I wish I had a high contrast mode because it is helpful.
So what it looks like it's doing here is it makes the entire environment black and white. It's going to be highlighting players as blue, NPCs as yellow, enemies as red, and interactable objects as teal. Now, I wonder how that's going to go color blindness for you. The difference between red, yellow, and teal.
Wow, the devil's in the details, huh?
Yeah.
Well, there's a photo of it there. How does that look to you? If you do that, how does that look to you?
Yeah, it's in the news post.
Okay,
I also said
this is interesting.
Okay, so you got it up. What do you see? Are you able to discern the difference between a player, an NPC, and an enemy? Is the question. Or no, a better question is, are you able to see four different colors on there in addition to the grayscale background?
I see four different people.
Okay.
Yeah, see the...
Yeah, no, I don't see any difference in them at all.
Yeah, but maybe you can change those colors to what suit you. I don't know if that's a thing that they're doing, but it'll be interesting to get your feedback on it once it's done.
When I first looked at this looked... I thought it looked really good because I could see the mountain was dark and I could see the light outlining of where you would walk into the, the cave.
Okay, so basically it's good on the environment side.
Yeah.
It's just when it comes to interaction, it's a little bit questionable.
Yeah.
Because the interact objects are the teal color, so they're actually a different...
Like, do you see where the anvil is?
Yeah.
That's supposed to be teal.
Yeah, those, I mean...
And then the person standing to the left of the anvil is yellow. The one standing below the anvil, oriented south, is blue.
Which is you, which is supposed to be the player.
Yeah, and then there's rabbits to the right side of the tree that are red.
Rabbits, I can't tell that they're red, but I can tell that they're dark.
Okay.
Which is what I would expect in a high contrast mode. I'm really kind of I'm surprised at the use of color, or at least a teal and yellow.
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting then.
Typically what you see.
But at the same time, remember that whenever we mouse over something, you probably don't see this, but whenever you mouse over something, you do get a red outline around it. And when you mouse over an NPC, you get a yellow outline around it. And when you mouse over an object, you get a teal element around it.
Well, that outlining does always help, but I'm just amazed that until you pointed it out, I didn't even see the people. Like, I could see the environment real well, but I looked right through the people.
Well, as you say, the devil's in the details then.
Yeah.
Devil's in the details on that. Okay.
And again, this is their first iteration of it, so obviously they'll take feedback and, they can always change that as we go forward. And, as I said, maybe you'll be able to change those colors so you can change the teal to something that your eye is going to see. We'll wait and see what happens, but any move towards accessibility is a good move. Whether it may not be perfect straight off, but if it makes it better and they can keep going ahead, let's fully support them on it.
Oh, absolutely. And the good things that we have here is it's easy to pick out this stuff in the environment. And I would even say, like, it's easy to tell the anvils from the ground and from the ground from the anvils.
So it's still better than it is normally.
Correct. Yeah, I'm just amazed. I just didn't notice the people. I looked right through them like they were, like this was Port Phasmatis or something, right? Like
you say yellow. Yeah.
It's crazy. the buildings are, this is good too. You can see the high contrast with the frame of the buildings and then the
So it's not all bad then. Good.
Oh no.
It's better than it currently is, which is a step forward.
Right, and I am surprised at some of the color use, but otherwise this is. It has some good things to it.
Nice. Okay. Double XP coming back on May 17th.
Cool.
Which, I mean, we knew it was going to be in May.
Every quarter.
That works. Yep. moving on to June. New archaeology dig site, the Damenheim dig site. Connect with mysteries you uncover to explore the long-forgotten secrets of Damenheim, as well as excavate and discover new items and explore the stories that they tell. Yes.
Yes, yeehaw.
Who has been excited about this? I mean, this will be the highlight of the quarter.
It's going to be the highlight of the year for many people.
I mean, yeah, I mean.
The way we're going.
and it's a mini site at that, right? But I mean, I love it when movies and games and stuff that I like, fan service is not a bad thing to me. It's a good thing. Give me fan service. I'm a fan. And we've all followed the story of Damenheim since, 2010, right? Like, ever since it showed up that day. I want to know. Like, I want to know, what's the mystery going to be? What are the,
what's the relic going to be?
Yeah, yeah. Like, this is exciting. This is probably the most exciting of what they're...
I think I'm more excited about the quest, but I'll put Damenheim Archaeology right behind that.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like a beefy quest, so... Yeah, I'm sort of with you there. One's June, so hey.
The graphics that they're showcasing in this, too.
Oh, phenomenal.
They know how to whet the player's appetite on this, is what I'll say. So, more on that when that gets closer. Also in June, Pride event, and the beach makes its regular return in the place of the canceled summer skilling event. Cancelled summer skilling event. What did they mean by this?
Skillers in the nuts again. Well, they told us that they were going to replace the beach this year with a skilling event.
Right.
So,
again, but I don't think anybody asked for that.
No, I think...
People like the beach, people like the hole.
Yeah, that's all people do at the beach, isn't it? The hole? Jump in the hole? I think pre-show Tanner's hit it on the head. When we say seasonal events, we're talking,
hang on,
fresh starts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We need to go through this because,
yes,
once again, reading between the lines, you learn so much with this. We're seeing another shift in terms of how Jagex handles their development work on this, in that they say they picked up the Game Jam projects, okay, but one of the challenges that they face is the impact of a change made at this point in development of the summer event. The summer event was taking as many resources to deliver as a persistent content release. So as they set out to build another strong foundation, which they could iterate on over the years, as they did with Christmas and Easter, they, in effect, were running out of time to build other things. So they said, with this change coming around 5 weeks into the development of the summer event, there's now less development time than they would typically have to work on these newly planned content releases. So to offset this, they cut down on the pre-production phase by a focused effort, and they focused on beefing up and completing these two extra Game Jam projects. And they say Game Jam projects are more akin to a prototype, a great idea that's in a somewhat playable form that requires plenty of additional resources across multiple teams to be release ready. So by building these, by building from these concepts with their reallocated development resources, they're confident they can get some great new content updates within the same release schedule. So that's how we got the Game Jam projects for May and June. But they were working on this summer event hub to replace the beach because they said they've heard for many years now that people want bigger and better seasonal events. Something that embodies the spirit of the season, brings everyone together, has a seasonal quest, and is packed with gameplay and earnable rewards. They did this with Christmas and Easter, which they made a reality, but they also built the strong foundation for each of those. And they say, our feedback, there's a balance to strike in achieving this, and it's clear that you want to see more development time invested in permanent content, especially in the nearer term, rather than content with limited seasonal availability. So my question is, where did they get that memo? That because the Christmas event went off well, we wanted the first half of the year in dev time to focus on seasonal event hubs.
And that's what we call holiday events, not seasonal events.
Yes.
As Tanner said pre-show, seasonal events are fresh starts, are leagues. They're a seasonal event. And hey, I'm all for them building these things that they can build on in the future to make development time for these holiday events easier. But you don't need to do them all in 1 year. You've done Christmas, you've done Easter. Leave the summer one.
Because the beach was...
Everyone loves a hole. Yeah, that's right.
I thought the beach was cherished by a lot of people.
I mean, I still do it. I mean, I just go down there, sit in the dungeon hole, and just slowly build that up because, you know, it's just like easy. That's where I earn my tokens.
and I think this year they should add like a nude section to the beach. You have a nude beach.
What?
Yeah, a nude beach.
This is not a dating site.
Because they have them everywhere else. They could be free.
Where does this come from?
Nude. I don't know. Because I forget who was it. Someone, one of the mods was asking for ideas, and I'm like,
Mod Luma was asking for it on Twitter.
Oh, dude, I wouldn't have.
What new rewards do you... No, she was asking what new rewards and what quality of life change. Oh, Tanis, quality of life change? He wants to just go balls free.
You know, just cash, man.
But the point behind this... The point behind this is that the situation we're in for the first half of this year, outside Christmas, and, you know, we can give them January and February to get going on this, but the rest of it? It sounds like we were the victims of a communications blunder here.
Yeah.
It does.
It really does.
I have met no one who has said that they want holiday events in place of content. Sure, people said they wanted better Halloween after the microtransaction thing last year. They wanted better Christmas that felt like Violet is Blue. Sure, people are going to say that about Christmas because Christmas is the most important one of them all.
Christmas and Halloween. Yeah, Christmas and Halloween are the two big ones.
But
Easter, I didn't mind it. But, right. You know, I preferred something like Slisky's chocolate event. But
so the question is, where did this signal come from and why did they choose to act on it?
And that's where I think they got the difference between seasonal and holiday events mixed up.
And I think a couple of things were conflated, right? Like, I think it's that where we're talking about seasonal events being like time-limited events or special things, you know, the fresh start, the leagues, the dead men, that kind of thing. Versus they also did get feedback about we would like a meaningful quest in a holiday event, right? But that it was a different thing, and I feel like that it was conflated, and they're like, oh yeah, okay, so we need to keep making the hubs. And I mean, and granted, good job is all around with the hubs and with the stuff that they made, but yeah, you're right, Shane. I mean, no one ever said to drop everything and focus on that,
especially when it's only in for, you know, 2 to 4 weeks.
Well, the idea is you rerun it, right?
But yeah, but that's only once a year.
Yeah.
So, you know, and
there's only so much you can do no matter what it is, okay? That's a couple weeks of content. But if you do, like, what we were calling seasonal events, that's all of the content that you get to do again in a new way with a new twist and a new... It's so much more...
Like, if they ran Trailblazer on RS3, the numbers would shoot to the roof.
Oh, my God, yes. And it's all stuff that's already there. It's in you're just
and the other thing is that people wanted an update from Mod Keeper, and it was only like last month we got the last one on that of what was coming. And you know, why not? Why didn't you tell us that you're working on the summer event thing?
Well, they did. They did say back in the last one that they are working on a new summer skilling thing. They didn't tell us that they had all their resources thrown into it. But yeah, exactly. It's it didn't really make sense when I heard about this.
Yeah,
I still want to know where the signal came from and why it was acted on.
And I think it was wires crossed. I really do.
I mean,
or maybe they were just looking at the number of people
right.
who were.
So you have a number of ways you can get information back into Jagex. You have CM. You have CM looking over social media, Twitter, Reddit, you name it. You have the surveys that happen, and you can have, you know, direct focus groups, which I don't know, direct focus groups and surveys from Jagex, which I don't think they're doing at this point. But those are the main biggest ways you can bring information back into Jagex, right?
I think it's surveys, because data is,
because we did have a survey.
It's all about how how it's interpreted,
right.
And if someone reads seasonal event and they have that idea in their head, right? I mean, I feel like it was probably the surveys, because I don't think they wouldn't have acted on this, and they saw
a seasonal event. Combine that with what they saw for Christmas, and they're like, okay, let's do more of this, because it was obviously received very well.
Right. I think, you know, the only time that they're going to do that from social media or something like that is the dreaded Hero Pass or something, right? Like, if it is a big enough uproar, okay, I can see them make, but not like this. Not in a, oh, that's what they want. No. I think it was probably a survey.
Okay. And again, why not tell us that the resources were tied up building these seasonal event hubs?
Yeah, just let everyone know, because I think that's been as big of, you know, that's been as bad as anything else, right? I think a lot of people have stuff to work on. Yeah. But
I'm still in the minority there, but yeah.
And I mean, at the very least, with this now being out there, and you know, we know exactly where this is, you question then, okay, what's going to happen for Halloween? Because you need to start then planning Halloween by August.
Yeah, that's the there we have to make a choice, right? Like, do we want Halloween, or knowing that it might mean that you ain't getting anything else?
You're damned if you do, damned if you don't say anything,
you don't.
Really.
Yes.
But I mean, it's clear at this point, more communication would have been better.
Yeah. I mean, the Halloween event this year was sort of centered around bought for Rintree, if I remember correctly. But before that, we had
the big concern with Halloween was the fact that you could get an item off Treasure Hunter that would, in effect, make it so that you didn't need to run candles and whatnot anymore at the Necromancer.
That's right.
Site.
Yes. Yeah. But I mean, also the couple of years before, where it was sort of sent, they had that hub centered around
Granger.
That
was good enough.
I think that's exactly, they just need to build on that, because that was a good little event. Or even better, bring back the one where we went into the haunted house and had to kill all the ghosts. That was probably one of my favorite Halloween ones.
Favorite.
They don't need to be cookie cutters of it. Like, you know, let's be honest, the Easter event was very similar in what it was doing to the Christmas event, which is fine. Oh, yeah. Totally different environments and such, but we don't need every holiday event to look like that.
Sure.
You know, we want variety. So build your hubs, do those type of things by all means, but please don't make them all the same. And yeah, differentiate between seasonal and holiday events. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not willing to go down that path and say that that was the wire crossing.
If it wasn't, please hear
I don't know because
we want seasonal events.
Yeah, because I don't know.
We want leagues.
I spent a ton of time because I was trying to get, and I ended up with six of the bunny ears. I was chasing five, and I got six. But no one was really, like, when I went down and visited, because I didn't do a lot of the Christmas one because I'd already had everything there. I didn't see a lot of, I mean, but people at the Christmas event were really enjoying it, talking, engaging and such. I didn't see a lot of that at the Easter event. A lot of people just go, oh, geez, this, you know, I've got this much more to go so I can get out of here. But, you know, I didn't see that same love for the Easter one as I did for Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the most important thing at the end of the day to remember is from when things were right and the players were in Jagex's favor. And that was the period of time where they started delivering on content. Content releases were regular. We didn't have the monthly behind-the-scenes posts, but we knew what was coming, you know, a month, a few weeks in advance. And that was and that was more than enough. And I think that's all players are really asking for, is to know that there is, you know, content on the way and the general direction that things are heading. And if there could be somebody from, you know, design level up and beyond for RS3 to say, this is, you know, what RS3 stands for, this is what RS3 is, and this is the direction, you know, that the game is going to go, whether that be story, whether that be types of skilling updates, or whether that be, you know, just general direction and guiding ethos of what the game is, just to hear that from somebody would be refreshing at this point in time, I think. So,
and like I was saying before, most people still have something that they can work on. And if it's not on their main, then it's on an Ald or an Iron Man or something like that. But they have something that they can work on, but they want to know what's going on, right? Yeah. They just want to know that, oh, there's something coming, or this is what's up. Hey, guys, you know, had we learned some of this when Keeper made his statement, I think it would have changed the kind of the tone.
Yeah, it would have. It would,
you know, I think it would have been a lot more settling. People would have been like, oh, okay. And would have kept grinding their, you know, whatever their individual journey was. But
and then, you know, you take it. Cool. It was March 26th we last heard from him. So 3 weeks ago. And, you know, if you take that post literally, we have nothing to show at this point. What that literally means looking at this is that there was nothing to show in relation to progress on that summer beach event.
Mm.
And therefore, content after that. And then if you look at that, you got the Relic of Graphical Update and High Contrast Mode. And that's it.
Exactly. And that's basically, they didn't, I mean, we thought, well, maybe they're holding something back, you know, and such. But obviously, they weren't. It was.
I mean, there could be, you know, bigger, you know, 6 months projects on the way, forecast release in July through September that are not there yet.
Of course.
Like, there could be those, but in the interim, as we see here. So,
yeah.
Definitely a little bit concerning. And you remember back when we did those discussions, we said, well, it's either that they have nothing to share, or they do have something and they're not sure if it'll pan out. And we now know that it was the former. They had nothing to share at that point. Literally.
Which I was actually on the other side. So it's scary to think that it was the former.
Nothing interesting happens.
But it looks like they're sort of...
Did I make it clear enough that they should have just said something, that they were working on the summer beach or the summer beach replacement?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Because that would have completely Well, maybe not. Maybe knowing the community, maybe it would have made things worse, and maybe that's why they didn't.
Hmm.
So
I don't know if it would have made things worse. Like I said, I think a lot of people have things that they can be working on, and for the most part, we kind of found that to be true.
But if you're told after this quest you have no new content until July outside of a graphical update,
For me, it wouldn't worry me so much because I do
and look
have
at how
some
that
goals
looks
I'm after. But
in the span of half a year, right?
I mean,
that's the scary
great.
Part, and that's what people were getting upset about.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess that's fair.
And a boss which is sort of high mid level is going to appeal to a wide range of people.
But this was before Rex Matriarch and Daemonheim Archaeology
exactly,
were brought
that's what
forward.
I mean. Exactly. So. That's exactly what I'm saying. It's like, you know, they have corrected the course and got those out. So I think they have saved themselves, because if we did have nothing but that skilling event, I think there would have been a lot of drama. Deserve it or not, I think there would have been a big outcry.
Yeah, exactly. And it all comes back to communications and expectations, as we've been saying for years. That is continually how they keep biting themselves in the butt, isn't it, Tanis?
Yep.
From Menaphos onwards, every time there's a problem, it's either communications or not enacting and not meeting player expectations. Every time. It's one of those two.
Yep.
It's like it's par for the course with this company, I guess. But
then, yeah, they get that they'll have the CEO, the content creator who understands that, and then, oh, okay, fixes it. Then they sack him and put someone else in who then just turns around and does the same thing.
Who are you talking about?
Well, I don't think I think he left on his own accord, but previous to Mod Keeper,
Warden?
Mod Warden, that's the one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, he knew comms, and that's the difference, right?
Yeah.
So, all right. Let's move on to the other spicy bit of the week.
We need Mod Dad back.
Mod Osborne?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was wonderful, wasn't he?
I loved Mod Osborne. that was always my dream, to go over to there and have a beer with Osborne and Mod Mark.
All right. Well, for people who pre-ordered the Necromancy Pet plushie, there's new plushies that can now be ordered. There's the gold-trimmed Rune Champion, the Dragon Chain Body, Cute Noob, and Virtus. Once again, through Makeship, if that's something that you're interested in, if you had it and you got Omen before, you can do that. Of course, Omen is now all sold out, but these four here, if you're interested in them, definitely snap them up, because once they're gone, they're gone. So, and they look really nice. I've seen pictures in real life of Omen and some of the other ones. So if you're at all a plushie collector, this is probably a good time to.
I was going to say, they are cute, but I'm not really into plushies.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know,
what I was into?
The book. The 20-year
book.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that one I've already got. Yeah.
Yeah. They found about 30 extra copies of the deluxe edition, though based on the fact we're recording this at the end of the week, they're probably gone by now. Definitely, if you can, still pick up the plain copy of that if deluxe is sold out. But in addition to that, this week we have new unstable proteins.
I just want to say, no, for anyone who did order the cookbook, it has been sent out too. The official cookbook did get the pre-orders, got released.
Yeah, and you know, since we're on that, I'll just take a moment here and say what I was going to say about the cookbook as well. I'm working with a couple of people to see if we can do something on the show here regarding the cookbook, maybe. Get some cooking video from these people, maybe, you know, talk about the recipes and how they actually are and taste on that.
They're actually quite interesting, some of them.
Some of them are fairly standard, and some of them are, a couple of them are different, you know?
There are, yeah, that's what I was going to say. There's a couple that are just normal, normal recipes, but there are a few that are interesting that I'm going to try out, you know? It's like the stuffed snake that they've done and just how they've gotten around things like that. The cooked jubbly is just a roasted chicken, but, you know, just different. I'm just having to flick through the different things that they've done, and it's, you know, and it's got some of the old, the old RuneScape icons in there for it. Yeah, it's a good little book. It was only $40, so Australian. So for anyone if you want to pick it up, it's a nice little addition to the 20-year anniversary book.
Yeah, right on. Unstable proteins, and not the kind of protein you get from cooked jubbly. But these came in this week. It's a new protein variety that are, as they say, overcharged and give 10% more XP than previous ones, but they're not usable from double XP and do not benefit from knowledge bombs.
So they're actually weaker than normal proteins.
Well, no, they're not usable during DXP, so double XP, like the double XP event, right?
That's what I mean, exactly.
And you can't use a knowledge bomb, but if you still have bonus XP in the skill, that will count.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially,
my view on this is, what, number one, 10%, not that much.
No, nothing. That's what I mean.
Nothing to write home about when it comes to that. But what they have done now has created a choice. Well, not really a choice, but now you have two kinds of proteins, and you have two different kinds that you need to use at different times. So if it's not double XP, I'm using unstable. You know, if it is double XP, I'm using my regulars.
Yeah.
And to me, that's really all it amounts to. So, I think there was some of the typical, too much XP discussion, but I just don't think that applies. And in fact, I think this is a sign that that when they bring in stuff like this, it's going to be better balanced in the future, because this is very balanced. I'm not always a big fan of balance when it comes to my skills. I want to just give me the give me the numbers, but but it's cool, right? Like, I mean, I see what they're doing and it makes sense, but it's just really I just see it as a choice between which protein are you using at which time.
You know, I see the original problem as being that proteins were really, being hoarded to the point they were only used on double XP, because they specifically mentioned you can't mm-hmm. use them on double XP. And I think this points to a bigger problem in the game, where people are really only skilling and mainly the buyable skills, but skills in general, if you know how to PVM, it almost makes no point to skill outside of a double XP event.
Well, and
because you can just spend the rest of the time making money for that double XP and just capitalizing in on that 48-hour period.
I mean, look, you can't fault somebody for trying to maximize their efficiency, right? Like, no one would ever question that on the PVM side. But what the question it does bring up, like that you say, it's bigger, is here's the dirty secret about proteins. It's not just the XP. In fact, I would say the XP is a smaller part of this. It's the convenience of training. It's the AFK-ness.
And
which goes to a bigger thing of there's a demand for that in every skill, right? Like, that's what people are really doing the proteins for. I mean, if I'm doing protein, it's because I have them and I want to be kind of, AFK or, working on portables or something like that. It just makes more sense
Especially with the protein prolongers too, 120 at a time. It's fantastic. Yeah. Load it up. I can go do a load of washing, unload the dishwasher, put it all away, come back, and yeah, I've still got three to go. I'll sit here, click, and then go off and do something else again.
It also explains why they've been trying to drop proteins out of the economy too. With at the last two big events, they did, you know, being able to donate however many thousands of proteins to get your Vorkath shard or what have you. You know, it makes sense now. Those were the kind of attempts to see, okay, can we kind of limit the amount that's in the economy and then see if people, you know, either get rid of all of them and then start using them, or if they're just kind of still just sitting there, right?
Yeah.
And I would expect over time, I would expect regular proteins to be phased out for these unstable ones.
Yeah, I would say the unstable are going to become a lot more popular or a lot more common than the other ones. I would, and I know we don't like the MTX, but I would say they'll probably start saving regular proteins just for those MTX things where you just get packs of them to get people buying keys, you know, sort of a week or two before the XPs.
Here's a little secret, y'all. I was gonna say don't tell everybody you heard it here, but if that does happen, Shane, if that does come to fruition, go to the Mimic.
Why?
They might not think to change.
Take them off her.
Yeah.
Because the Mimic is the treasure hunter boss.
Yeah, that's right.
It drops proteins a lot. Yeah,
it drops a lot of proteins.
That's it. But I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you know, it's as a business manager myself. Well, how can I increase profit? Well, that's one way I'd look at it. Phase them out. Bring in these unstable ones that can't be used on DXP. Save the other ones as that sort of let's sell them for DXP type situations and get money coming in. You know, it's ugly, but you know, companies, as we said before, they're not charities. They've got wages to pay. But, everything. I mean,
the biggest thing that I'm concerned about, and Tanis, you can go after me on this. My biggest thing is that this foretells a bigger problem with XP in the game.
Oh yeah,
because if people are doing this with proteins and they're not training, what are they doing with everything else that's buyable?
Why a lot of stuff's going down.
Right. Like, that's what I said. I really don't think if you have a good, consistent money-making method and you have something you can do to pass the time in game, I really don't think you're sinking money into skills outside of double XP anymore.
Yes. Well, I've had a whole bunch of Wines of Zamorak that I got from one of the bosses at Dungeon Wars 2. God Wars 2, I should say. They're like 600 GP now. I mean, I go back to last time I was buying and selling them, they were, you know, 5 and 6K. Yeah, now there's 672 GP. It's like, what happened?
And I mean, even
a lot of the mushrooms. It's just like,
and I think this points to, again, a fundamental issue with the skilling economy in general, with everything, you know, going down, is that I feel like we're starting to feel that push where the bulk of what we are seeing in game and, you know, in terms of the high-end skilling items is that there's just no demand for them outside of double XP. I think that's why the prices are going down.
That's right. And again, because there's so many – I mean, I've got enough proteins to get me to 200 mil on a couple of my skills for this week.
And I was talking to Sirion about this. It's why I don't train my skill peer outside of double XP.
Mm.
Why sink time into it?
Well, I think it's just it's a matter of if you're playing, if you're not.
Yeah.
I mean, some people are not
PVM. Some people are not efficiency minded.
And some people are going to be like, and you know, I really think you've still got a pretty good percentage of people that are going to play. play AFK. Rather they're watching movies or playing.
Yeah, and I mean the amount of proteins, to bring it back to that we're talking about to get something to 200 mil or 120 is astounding. So it's not as though people are hitting pause for, you know, the protein reason. I realize this discussion is kind of moved on from the proteins to more of a general skilling economy kind of thing, but nobody is sitting, I shouldn't say nobody, a small amount of people aside, like you, Parnassius, are sitting on the proteins needed to get you to 120 or 200 in a skill. A small amount of people are doing that, but I think just in general,
there's also a lot waiting for 99s,
there's just a lot
too.
Of people who are like, yeah, I'll just wait till double XP. I know it comes every 3 months.
Hmm.
I'll train my levels up to do all the quests I need to do, and I'm good otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, now, you gotta, let's be fair, because I really think it's the ease of access with proteins. They are not the best XP per hour on double XP. It's not the best use of your time. It's definitely not the most efficient way to play. But it's the easiest. Like, there has to be something to be said for that.
Well, that's right. And as I said, I mean, I'll sit down, okay, I've got the housework to do. I load up all my proteins, put those on, come back every sort of 8 or 9 minutes, click on the screen, do that. Then when I'm actually sitting down in front of the computer, I'll go and do those sort of more lean forward, faster XP ones. But it gives me that, you know, it increases my playtime, you know, for an extra 4 or 5 hours a day where I'm doing stuff around the house that I'm still earning decent XP.
Well, here's my controversial statement for the night. I should be able to pay for that and have it. I'm 40 something year old dude. Come on, man.
What do you want to pay for?
Let me buy my proteins like that. Like,
you want to buy unstable ones?
Whatever. Let me buy them all. I'll take them all because I'm not like, I don't have 12 hours anymore, right? Like, but I could do that. I could do that on a second screen if I'm doing some paperwork or something or this or that. And I should be able to do that. And I don't see anything wrong
with it. Yeah, that's the fundamental difference between RS3 and old school. It's a difference in strategy, whereas that's okay over here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think everyone thinks it's okay, but I think it's okay just because.
Well, the funny thing is, everyone makes a noise, but everyone still does it, don't they? I mean, I hear all these YouTubers screaming, "Oh, it can't be on what they're doing!" And then you click on, and they're sitting there, you know, on World 84, right beside you, pumping away with all that stuff that they're complaining about.
Hell yeah! At least I'm honest, right?
I don't think it's going to make a big difference in the grand scheme of things, skilling economy-wise. I do think it will make a difference in terms of when proteins are used. And I feel like that's the big through line of this. And they're just giving them that 10% buff to kind of lessen the blow of the other ones going away, I'd say. And don't expect it to happen overnight. I think, you know, just expect it to happen
It'll
over
be phased.
Time.
Yeah.
So.
Which I have no real issue with, but yeah. But as I said, they won't disappear completely. They'll be there for special, you know, special treasure hunter events the weeks before each DXP and things, you know.
Yeah, which is fine. Add them to the time to skill promos, right? Mm-hmm. They come before the double XP.
Exactly.
I'm cool with that. Bring it.
Yeah. It'll save a lot of hoarding that way too.
Mm-hmm. All right. I had an idea this week as I was preparing the show, and this is also ties in with the merch update in the cookbook. I already mentioned what we're going to do with the cookbook, but another piece of merch that's on the way is the hardback journal, a journal with the RuneScape map on the front of it that has 192 pages to, you know, write your journaling in. And I was actually thinking of picking one of these up. And moving the edit notes to this, because you you look at the RS3 show, the old school show, and monthly bits. With that, you're looking at, you know, 9 shows a month, and you know, if each one has a portion of a page associated with that, and you have 192 pages in there, you look at this thing, and you know, in under 2 years you have this book filled up. And then I was thinking, well, you know, we start using this book for the edit notes, and then after that we'd raffle it off to one of the Patreon supporters, because I bet people would like seeing our edit notes like that, even though they're handwritten.
That'd be cool.
That would be cool.
So I'm seriously contemplating picking one of those up and going through that. So let us know if that's something that you think would be fun for us to do, and we could provide regular updates on that too. Because right now I just take the edit notes on my page a day calendar pages from the past few days, and then after the show is out and done, and they just go in the garbage. So.
I think it would be fun to, like, if you were starting a new character, right? And
that's another good use case for it, too, I think.
Oh, yeah, right.
But at the same time, for that, when it comes to, you know, RuneScape goals and keeping track of where you're at, let's be real that something like Apple Notes or even Notion is going to be a better thing for that, because you could include screenshots, links to the wiki, links to your conversations with ChatGPT about RuneScape stuff. Which, by the way, it can do, believe it or not.
We might do that as a segment. All that?
I tell you what, if you do that,
I mean, yeah.
If you're willing to sit there and write them all out,
my edit notes.
I will. Your edit notes. I will donate the journal to the show.
Oh, you don't need to do that
to get that done.
You no, don't no, need to. No, 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 no. You don't need to do that. I was going to do this before, and no. No, you're not doing that. Donate another bond next time we have a giveaway instead.
Okay, I'll do that. That's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, you could write fan fiction in it. All right, like it'd be your RuneScape fan fiction collection, right? Or
oh my god,
the possibilities are endless.
Maybe I do, because I am having so much trouble doing digital. I'm an artist with normal pencils and thing. I'm trying to learn digital art, but I just struggle so much with it. Maybe I do that and do my that way. Yeah. And I've got all the different things.
Two apps you need to get, Procreate and Pixelmator.
Got it. Oh, which one?
Pixelmator. It's basically a Mac OS, iOS, native version of Photoshop with Apple design guidelines to it, so it's easy to get into. Can open all the Photoshop files.
Yeah.
And whatnot.
No, I got Procreate Pro Edition, but yeah, I like my pencil doing it and then doing the colors and all that. But yes.
All right. Also this week, that's fine. Just a few patch notes. Engine fixes. They fixed a VFX issue with the fire in Zuck's Igneous Rain phase, otherwise known as the pizza phase, which I know a lot of people have been having issues with, so that's there. The gate of the Cantherby Bee Farm has been fixed, and the gate is situated west of the Cantherby Lodestone, but on the east side of the farm. So let's just say west and call it a day. And there were some rather interesting pictures of how the gate was before, so I thought I'd mention that. And finally, an odd one to end out patch notes, the Falador Party Room's Balloon Bonanza will no longer be blocked by planting mithril seeds in the party room. Taking us way back.
Way back.
So. Alrighty, folks. Let's go through some of our achievements this week. We don't have too many of them again, and that's A-okay. So starting off here this week, we have Godin with 120 Slayer on April 13th. Yahoo with 120 Herblore on the 13th. Atreus with 99 Summoning and 99 Hunter on the 12th of April. And DJ Moore, that's Bears, with 200 million Strength XP on the 11th.
Well done, everyone.
Nicely done.
And it's Yahoo!
I remember that from back in the day.
Yeah,
I remember that.
You're old enough for that one?
Yeah. So pick of the week. Were either of you guys big fans of, say, the NES, Super Nintendo, N64, Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance, and DS?
Dude, that's my childhood.
I had my DS.
The only one missing is Atari. I've had every one of those systems you named off.
So,
Commodore 64?
Yep. Well, I mean, I never played it much, but we had one in the house.
Oh,
my brother was all about 64.
Yeah, I grew up on that.
There was a recent rule change on iOS, and game emulators for retro games are now legal on iOS. They were not in the past.
Nice.
So the pick of the week this week is the Delta Game Emulator, a free app on iOS, presently rated number one in the entertainment category, emulates all the systems that I highlighted from NES, Super Nintendo, N64, Game Boy, Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance, the DS, with more to come in the future. Supports controllers, including Switch controllers, Switch Pro controllers, PS4, PS5, Xbox controllers, MFI game controllers, as well as Bluetooth and wired keyboards. And the idea behind this is that you load up your favorite game ROMs, wherever you get them, either through, of course, making your own game ROM through any of the pieces of hardware that are available or finding them on the internet, as people do. And you load it up into the files section on your phone or through iCloud. And next thing you know, you're playing an old game to the point where I might have spent about 90 minutes last night playing Pokemon Yellow on this.
You mean I can get Donkey Kong back?
Yeah, any game on there. Any game on there that worked on any of those systems, you'll be able to run. So if you want to go back to the first N64 Smash, you can do that and throw up a controller, too, with that. And you know what the best part about this is? Is that you think of it as a handheld, right? Mm-hmm. Using it as just handheld with your phone. But what you can also do if you're playing like an N64 game on here, AirPlay it to your Apple TV or compatible TV. And then you have the exact same sort of thing you always used to have, except rather running it off your console, it's running off your phone or your iPad. That's what this is capable of with this.
That's pretty cool. Oh, yeah, that is pretty cool.
That is. I'm looking at this one. Now, do you get any... If I get a link off you, do I get any... Do you get anything this time?
No,
Unlike the last one I did?
Not this
time. Okay, I'll just download it then without waiting for your link.
It also supports the cheat codes that people used on those platforms. So Game Genie... Pro Action Replay, Game Shark, Action Replay, and Codebreaker for any of the platforms that were out there. And as you would expect as well, it's all modern saving. You can save the exact state that you're in the game by just closing the app. You can save states to files and export them you can restore them. Supports as well, in addition to the iOS file system and iCloud, Google Drive, and Dropbox as well. And one of the things I haven't actually looked into is that it's got custom skins for all systems. So if you're playing a handheld and you don't like the way the one looks that it gives you, you can completely skin that to look like what your old one used to be. So if you used to have one of the lime green Game Boy colors, you can do that and have that for this too. So. It's got the kitchen sink on this, and this is, you know, this is the iOS Nintendo-based game emulator that you want to be using. It's by far the most stable one. It's by far the one that isn't doing anything shady or violating any rules, because there were some previous ones that came out earlier in the week, but they were taken down because they violated copyright. But this is definitely the one you probably want to go for, and that's why I brought this out as pick of the week, because I feel like, you know, this is old hat for people on Android, right? You could do this from day one on Android, whereas it was always a big no-no on iOS, whereas here now it's actually out in the open and it's encouraged for retro games only, of course, because Apple doesn't want you competing with their with their regular games that are out there, but.
And a 4.9 out of 5 rating, too. That's probably one of the highest I've seen.
Yeah, exactly. You know, when you look at these sorts of apps, it's it's something that, you know, you want to have done right. So that's why it's this one. Link can be found in the show notes over at update.show. What games, if you were going back to any of those systems, what's the first games you would go for?
Castlevania.
Okay.
Castlevania Theory, yeah.
Yeah, I loved Donkey Kong, and I loved it's stupid, but Tetris.
that would be NES then, right? For Tetris.
Yeah.
Okay. I have half a mind to go and see if we can find a Smash ROM for the original N64 one. That would be quite fun. So.
But. Nice.
I'll give you a list and you can find them for me.
I'm not doing that. No, I did what I did.
I'm the one who will sit there and I'll find the wrong link and end up, you know, getting hacked and losing everything again.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
My son's into all this stuff, so I'll get him to do it.
Yeah, maybe he can help you on that then. Because I know on my side, this was just a flat file that I downloaded and I didn't even need to execute anything on the computer for it. I just copied it to iCloud and that was that. So
that's cool. Yeah. But,
alrighty. Really cool. What have we been up to in RS, Tannis, since it's been 3 weeks? Go for it.
doing some low impact things, wood cutting, a little bit of farming, and what was the other thing I've been doing? A little bit of fletching, but mostly just wood cutting.
Okay, fair enough. Yep. Still on that track for DXP?
Yep.
Nice. Pern, how has Zuck been going?
Okay. Zuck hasn't been great. I have died 7 times the last 2 days. First time I've been back for a little while. Back still playing up a little bit, so I haven't really been in that sort of heavier PVM mode. I did complete the Vindicta drop log.
Ooh!
So finished that. Finished Hellweir. Now onto the Twins.
I don't
just
like
got
the Twins.
One pet to go on the Twins. No, not a big fan because I can't really AFK. But still, I mean, they're easy enough when you're sort of watching. So an hour a day there. Just got the one pet to go there. I am at just hit the 700 kill mark there. Took me, I think it was 1,400 odd kills to complete the other drop log. Also, finally got my Master Quest Cape back.
Ooh, what was missing?
Oh, just the Thelmon. That's why I said it was very exciting. Because he's only there Wednesdays. I think three weeks I missed getting it. So I actually ended up setting an alarm on my phone every Wednesday to do Thelmond. So got that. So got my Master Quest Cape back, which is good.
Very nice. So what's the plan for Zuck? Because I know, you know, a month and a bit ago we had you for the PVM teaching monthly bit. Is there anything on there question wise, things that need further explanation?
Everything you told me is working perfectly. It's my execution. I am useless at prayer switching. So I've got them keybound, but yeah, it's just when I get the triple Jads, because Jad appears sort of 2 or 3 seconds after everyone else on the wave, I've got to watch what wave I'm on. I know that he's coming up, but sort of the other things start hitting you. So you're sort of looking at them, then all of a sudden he spawns. You get dragged out from the safe spot by one of them, and then I get hit by two Jads sometimes, or the prayer flicking. I've just got to remember when he goes fully up, for some reason, my brain—I know it's not—but my brain tells me when he goes fully up, he's hitting the roof and the rock drops. But that's the one where he's shooting the fire out of the magic out of his belly. So I've just got to get myself used to that. And,
yeah, the thing that I always use to differentiate with that, and I haven't had any problems since, is just watch for the feet and the shockwaves, because that's the ranged one. That's my differentiation on that. And since then, it's been no problem. Though, you know, keybinds, mouse, that might have something to do with it too. So
yeah, but no, it's been fun, and you know, as I said, you know, I did four attempts one day, three attempts yesterday, and No visitors this weekend, so kids are away. So I'll be basically just there for this weekend. So I will have that cape. I am determined not to give up until I get the cape this weekend.
Nice. As for me, the push at the Raziel continues for the lantern, the last item in the drop log. Though in chatting with people, it could be quite some time still. So I've looked to diversifying the RuneScape 3 experience time with kind of the same thing that you've been doing, Tanis. I've been preparing for double XP. Did some. I got some of the fletching stuff because last time I did, I got a bunch of the zygomite hair. So then this time it comes into getting the rest of the arrows and, you know, hopefully just get a huge, huge gob of fletching XP when double XP comes around. Because I think I've decided at this point, and the only thing really keeping me from leaning into this fully is the fact I can't be on RS3 and old school at the same time, is that I would like... I would like to get probably 120 all in the same way that I got 99s in that same order.
Well, do you remember that order?
I have it logged because the RSBNB website did that, yes.
Yeah, I don't know if I would remember mine.
Yeah, yeah, we probably have a bunch of your orders in there from when you were being tracked on there.
I really just remember my first cape, which is my quest cape.
Yeah, same. And then I think it was
fishing after that one.
Yeah, farming before the presets, but unfortunately that won't be possible going forward. But usual weekly plug: old school RuneScape update comes out every Sunday. We're gonna have another poppin' show this week talking about old school's foray into rebalancing combat without going the way RS3 did and how that is going for them. Definitely some interesting stuff happening there with min hit, max hit, and magic balancing in particular. We talked about magic last week on the show, so go back, listen to that if you are interested in old school and figure out and want to see a way that, you know, Jagex could have done it without EOC. It's actually quite interesting. youtube.com/@OSRSupdate. But more on the combat rebalance stuff this week on the podcast and our usual adventures over there. My big highlight for the week, 60 Mining Guild. That's big.
Very nice.
Yeah. And we actually have a new mining training method that is relatively AFK that came out with Varlamore. So,
oh.
I realize I'm going to maybe give the both of you guys a conniption here. But I don't actually think old school needs the mining and smithing rework.
Jeez. No. Hey, smithing, I agree. Mining, no way. They need at least something to store more ore in, like the ore box.
True.
Because I logged on to my INR's account, which is sort of the one I use for old school over there, and just trying to get my mining up, you know, loading 28 iron ore and then running and banking it and then running back down. It's just like, oh, God, I remember why I hated this skill earlier.
Yep. Motherload mine.
Yeah, but I'm only free to play at the moment. So.
Oh, okay, fair. Fair.
Is that motherload mine over on the other
no,
island?
No, motherload mine is part of the Dwarven Mountain, and the idea behind that one is that you mine something called pay dirt, and then you run it through a sifting mechanic. Then you get ore that's relevant to your level, and there's a banking chest right there. It's slower XP, but that's a way of getting ore. And if you want ores and bars in a way of getting that without needing mining, there's Zolcano, of course, that comes after Song of the Elves and Prif, but it's a skilling boss. So...
Okay, cool.
That's kind of why I say I'm getting to the point where I don't think old school needs the mining and smithing rework.
Yeah. I mean, if you had things like mining bosses and that type of stuff,
Zolcano's so much fun. It's funner than Croesus, dare I say.
No, but I still haven't done Croesus yet.
Right.
I didn't find Croesus all that fun.
Yeah. But Interesting times ahead, nonetheless. But we'll be back next week for Quest Week, of course, here on the podcast. Thanks to the both of you for being here. Tannis, good to have you back.
Thank you, Shane. Good to be back.
If you want the podcast delivered automatically to you, the best way to do that is to subscribe. Head on over to update.show/subscribe. We're on all the major podcast listeners out there. Apple, Pocket Cast, Spotify, and more. Also YouTube as well, youtube.com/RSBNB. Do give the channel a like and subscribe. Greatly helps us out. And, I mean, why not if you like the show? So with that being said, we'll see you guys next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. See you then, everyone. Take care.
See ya.
Happy scraping.